People who are optimistic about crypto believe it's a technology that can improve economic systems and solve real-world problems. But for the most part, when people buy crypto today, they're not buying it for its utility. They're not making the day-to-day payments in crypto. Instead, most people buy crypto as a speculative investment in the hopes that it'll increase in value. My understanding is that for the most part, people think of crypto as a speculative asset class. They buy it because they think it'll be worth more in the future. Does that match your perception of the way most people think about crypto today?
It very much so. It is very much a retail-based speculative asset class, but it's starting to move beyond that. My thesis and provocation would be that there's a lot of use cases well and truly beyond the speculative asset class for crypto, and I think that's what excites me as well.
I'm Andy Jones, and in part two of this series, I'll be speaking with Jason Tipman, CEO of the Australian cryptocurrency exchange SwiftX, about whether crypto can move beyond speculation and deliver real-world utility. We'll discuss the advantages crypto might have over traditional money, the types of problems crypto could help solve, as well as some of the reasons many people remain skeptical. Jason, I've heard you say that you believe that cryptocurrency has the potential to democratize financial freedom. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Look, most certainly. I've never thought, I know some purists do and some early adopters thought, that crypto would entirely replace a traditional financial system and banking system. It could, but I think it's more going to enhance it. But it is faster, cheaper, and better than the traditional financial system. So there are elements that it's going to replace, but it is going to enhance the experience that people have. And I think that's what people need to kind of understand with crypto.
One idea that's really fundamental to crypto is the idea of decentralization. Can you explain the way crypto is decentralized and how that's different to something like the Australian dollar?
Look, the whole premise of crypto and the whole premise of blockchain is this idea of decentralization, that it is not centrally controlled. Mm. Your money is not centrally controlled effectively by the government. Now, with crypto, they don't have any control over your money. They really don't. They're trying to get increasing controls over taxation of it and the likes, which understandably, if you look at it from a society point of view, it needs to. But fundamentally, you own your crypto. You can. We have the technology now. We're still trying to wait for some legislation to catch up, but it's getting there closely, and it's something SwiftX will be offering down the track, is crypto-backed lending, which is quite different to the banking system. Because in the banking system, you're just going, please lend me your money. They've got someone else's money as deposits, and they're lending them out. But back to the whole centralization or the decentralization component of it as well is that, you know, at the moment, our governments are using the money supply to control economies. Governments are using their money to work out, you know, how trading happens. That is starting to break away. You can have a farmer in central Australia dealing with somebody up there in Southeast Asia, and it's a peer-to-peer transaction.
Mm.
You are cutting out this concept of the broader network of money, how it moves around the world. So that's what I mean by kind of the decentralization element of it. And then we have these stable coins.
Stable coins are a type of crypto designed to hold a stable value, usually pegged to a traditional currency like the US dollar. Unlike Bitcoin, which can fluctuate in value wildly overnight, stablecoins are designed to behave more like digital cash.
Stablecoins have really come to the fore, and I think that's another area where we're going to see they'll move away from that centralization towards decentralization of money. So I think it'll be an interesting area.
Mm. And a moment ago, you referred to moving money overseas and not needing to go through a central, like a bank. Can you talk to me about how remittances, sending money across country borders, is different with crypto than it is with traditional money?
It's vastly different. If I use the example of the Swift payments network, which many of us have to use and certainly businesses have to use, but many of us use for international transfers and that, there's about 13 different steps. 6 or 7 intermediaries required in that.
13 but steps to send money from one country to another.
Effectively, that go all on in the background. But that is why it takes a couple of days.
Mm.
That is why it costs up to 8.35% of the transaction. It could be hundreds or thousands of dollars to transfer this money in many cases. And that is why it's very difficult as well to trace it where it is when it's getting lost and you're trying to work it out. Crypto is one-to-one. I can transfer you $1 or I can transfer you $1 billion. And I can do it like that in a fraction of a second, for a fraction of a dollar, and you can see it at each step of the way. So it's the execution via a smart contract that is allowing peer-to-peer one step, essentially, or two, if you want to call it two, rather than all of those other steps and all the reconciliations and everything that go on in the background. This is why I say it can profoundly change the way in which commerce works and the way in which people, there's another story about the way in which people invest. And that was probably back onto your question around democratization of financial freedom. So a few things wrapped into there, but in essence, stable coins, which are a form of crypto, you're not going to be kind of using them as a speculative asset class because they're essentially stable. They're not volatile because they're based on a currency. But they're definitely a form of crypto and they run over the blockchain and we're talking using smart contracts to execute and control them. Stablecoins also could solve the $6 billion transaction fees on our debit and credit cards here in Australia. So if the Reserve Bank and the government would just essentially flick a switch, that $6 billion could go back to you as a consumer and go back to businesses that are absorbing many of these costs. So we talk about a productivity issue in this country. We've got simple things like that. Now, is it simple or isn't it simple? Well, the reality of it is that a lot of traditional financial services providers are hanging on to that profit and they're not wanting governments to give it back to you. So that, again, comes to the decentralization element of it. The technology is there now, but we have traditional players that are hanging on to profits and we have governments that aren't willing to free it up because they're still beholden to those many traditional players. So it can radically democratize people's financial freedom as well.
When researching for this conversation, I learned a little bit about tokenization of assets. Can you explain this idea of tokenization of assets and how it might apply to a real-world example?
I think where we're moving is towards a digitization of every asset in the world.
Oh, what do you mean by that?
That's what I think we're moving towards. And tokenization is a large part of that.
Okay.
It's even when we start to think about money and people say, oh, well, crypto's not money. Well, what is money? Because it's been a long time since we moved off the gold standard in 1971. And it's been a long time even before that, that the actual pieces of paper or more so the coins were out of silver and everything. So just think about even money is not really worth what it's printed there on, if you think about it.
It's only worth
the value
what we agree
attribute,
to.
We attribute to it. For years now, the banking system has digitized your money. So, you know, crypto is moving to another level, but what it is moving from is that centralization to the decentralization. So back to every asset class being digitized, fully, properly digitized, the building that we're in, the roads out there. So tokenization is the digitization of assets and the fractionalization of assets. So the breaking down. We've fractionalized companies through stock ownership, through, you know, stock market shares, For hundreds of years, quite frankly. But that's just been a company that we've given you a fractional ownership. It was a paper share certificate. It's gone digital. So what we're starting to see now is the tokenization means the digitization. So even those stocks in the companies now are being digitized and being fractionalized. So typically, if I wanted to buy this building that we're in here today recording, you know, it might be a $8, $10 million building that I've got to find. And I'll go and grab a few colleagues and we'll split it up or I'll buy it myself and we'll do it that way. Tokenization, though, enables this $10 million building to be broken down to fractions of a dollar and anybody in the world could buy into it and own it. So that's largely tokenization when we talk about that. It will enable big pieces of infrastructure that are typically at the moment only bought by our big super funds or big investment hedge funds that can control all of that because it's very difficult to split that ownership up right down to small pieces.
And so that would be a way of sort of lowering the barrier of entry for someone to invest into different types of assets?
The democratization of financial freedom, that kind of a level of decentralization, it is about splitting it down to bite-sized chunks that each and every individual can have an ability to own. So if I think that in the future that investing in infrastructure is going to be water assets or whether it be bridge infrastructure or digital infrastructure, typically for an individual investor, it's very hard to get access to. So crypto, as we move towards the tokenization of assets, we are reducing, once again, many of those intermediaries. We are reducing the fees and we are making it technically and practically accessible by everyday investors. So that's what excites me. That's what I want to be part of. So tokenization, we are starting to see it happen of securities, And over time, we'll see tokenization of real-world assets.
Mm.
We'll be able to tokenize commercial buildings. You will be able to tokenize commercial properties. And it's happening, but in small areas, pockets of the world at the moment, not mainstream, but it will in the next few years. And you'll be able to tokenize your own property, your own house. We just have to understand that because you can do it technically,
mm-hmm.
which we can do, there is obviously the practicality that sits behind it. And how do you manage a tokenized asset? And then legally, you know, some of those ownership structures, et cetera, particularly when we cut across jurisdictions. So I keep saying that the tech is virtually there. Our lawmakers have to catch up, and then the practical aspect. But I guess if there's one message that I'm getting out to your listeners
mm-hmm.
is don't be like me back in 2010 and sit on the sidelines. Get in now and start to really understand it.
So we've touched on a bunch of the ways in which crypto has advantages and real potential to sort of revolutionize financial systems. I'd also love to talk about potential risks or challenges or perhaps some skepticism people have around crypto, starting with volatility. A cryptocurrency like Bitcoin is much more volatile than many standard asset classes. Bitcoin's had some pretty spectacular highs and lows over the years. How do you think about this volatility and what does that what do everyday users need to think about?
I think you have to understand that any new asset class takes a while for people to understand it, and it will have a level of speculation, and it doesn't have a lot of liquidity. So when you get speculation, when it's new and you don't have a lot of liquidity, you get a lot of volatility. When you get more people coming into the market, which is what we're seeing, the volatility usually starts to decrease. Now, Bitcoin, if we call that out specifically, the worst return for any four-year period is 34%. That's not too bad. That's over a four-year period.
34% in the green going up.
The median return over that four-year period has been 1,500%. So I think you have to acknowledge that the media loves calling out the volatility,
mm-hmm.
and it is volatile. They mm-hmm. love calling out the drops, but you have to go back to the data and have a look at the data and the fact that it, out of 9 out of the last 12 years, it's been the best performing asset class. However, as I say, cryptos are volatile. And people do need to understand that it is going to be it's going to generally have a higher rate of return, but it is going to be a more volatile asset. So you have to be careful when you get in. Leverage is something which kills a lot of people too. So, you know, I say exercise some caution
mm-hmm.
about getting into it. Understand that it is going to be volatile and be careful about the percentage of your portfolio that you want to invest in it. And get yourself educated. I think, you know, any asset class that you're going to invest in, you have a responsibility. It is your money. You control it, or you should control it. You need to get some education around it. So I would encourage people to invest responsibly and not assume that just because it has gone up this much that it's going to continue. It will drop most likely at some point in time.
Mm. I think another concern that some people have is that crypto can be used by criminals for illicit trade. Can you share your perspective on that?
Once again, lots of media hype around this,
mm-hmm.
but there is no denying that crypto is part of that, mm-hmm. that has been used for that.
Sure.
I think we've seen any asset in the world can be used for illicit trade. Now, what I think is a bit misunderstood, though, with crypto is, you know, if I was ever thinking about using it for illicit activities, crypto is the last thing that I would use.
Why is that?
Because it's actually highly traceable. And that's what people don't understand.
Mm.
So it is highly traceable. The thing with crypto, though, is that once a transaction has been placed on the blockchain or carried out on the block's built, very hard, if not impossible, to reverse. And that's one thing that scammers are relying on. So it's much more traceable than cash. So it's unfair for people to say, oh, all the criminals and scammers are using it. They're using it because the irreversibility of it. And they're using it because people are lack of education.
Mm.
They're using it because of the continued need for education with it. So any new asset class that people don't understand, scammers are getting in on.
Mm.
And they're taking advantage of people. So it's not actually that the blockchain's insecure.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually more secure. And it's more traceable than cash and anything else that we do. But it is that it's because it's a new asset class. People are riding on the back of it. But if you are wised up to scammers,
mm-hmm.
you should never be scammed in crypto land, or people should never be able to take your money in crypto land.
Well, I'd love to ask you a little bit more about scams and rug pulls and meme coins. I think given the low barrier of entry for someone to create a cryptocurrency, my understanding is pretty much anyone with an internet connection and a bit of know-how can create a new cryptocurrency. And as a result, bad actors can leverage that for scams or hype-driven schemes. And we've seen some pretty high profile examples in recent years. Can you talk to me about that issue and what measures can be put in place to help everyday people not be exploited?
We have seen some pretty high profile cases. And the rug pulls is something that I think everybody that's investing in crypto needs to be alive to. Mm. And effectively, a rug pull is what you described as somebody who's started up a crypto and then pulled it. So it was the issuer of it. They've issued it, hyped it up, and then they've just pulled it. It's about education again, and it's about doing your research. You know, there are tools that you can go on to see how much trade is happening. Mm-hmm. You can also see how much of the token that the owners still hold of the token. You can read the white paper. Now, some of these cryptos which are being issued, some of these meme coins don't even have white papers.
Mm.
So there's really no business case behind them. So I would be encouraging people to do that research and then buy from a reputable exchange. Once again, reputable exchanges like SwiftX have a token listing policy.
Mm-hmm.
We have a token listing committee. The other thing, though, that can be done is governments need to hurry up and get the industry regulated. It's been unregulated for way too long. In Australia, and I've talked about this before, and I talk about it regularly with politicians, we spent 30 to 40 years building the regulated financial planning industry.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, no one can get advice from a regulated financial planner about crypto. And the industry, the financial planning industry, can't get insurance on it because the government haven't provided clear legislation.
Mm.
So, frustrating for me with both sides of government when they talk about, we're here for the voters and we're here for the consumer to look after them. Well, if you were, you would have brought legislation in much earlier.
Mm.
To their credit, both sides of parliament are supportive of it. To the government's credit, in September 2025, they brought out an exposure draft and they hope sometime in 2026 that it will be moved into legislation. So I'm pleased to say we're moving there. But that is another area that adds to consumer protection.
Okay. Well, I'm very interested to dive more into regulation in our next episode. But for now, I think we'll wrap up our conversation. Thanks,
Jason.
That's
great. Hopefully, it's been some good points we've raised.
Absolutely. In Jason's view, crypto has the potential to change how money moves, who has access to it, and who controls the systems behind it. But whether crypto is able to reach mass adoption depends not just on technological innovation, but on regulation, trust, education, and the frameworks built to support it. In the third and final episode of this series, we'll explore what would need to happen for crypto to move into the mainstream. This series was produced by Day One with support from SwiftX. I'm Andy Jones. Thanks for listening.